So on one recent occasion, you said, I might be paraphrasing slightly, but you said basically just purify each and every thought in its arising, don't do anything unwholesome, the slightest unwholesome thing, and that's the practice. And then, so that's kind of one brief description of what the practice is. And then another kind of description of what the practice is that has also come up often on other occasions is that the practice basically consists of developing complete understanding of the nature of things, or like completely undoing every misunderstanding, as you could say, about the nature of things. So the question is not like, is in regards to how to understand what the practice is. So like, I think the question that could be asked about this is, are these actually two, like describing two different things, or is it actually a description of the exact same thing from two slightly different perspectives? Because, so like for example, that kind of previous type of view that I used to have was much, well, seemingly much closer to the first of those things that I mentioned, like just don't do anything unwholesome. And then, but it didn't occur to me, and I thought, okay, the one who has just purified everything will understand, will have full knowledge and understanding by virtue of his purification. But it didn't occur to me that
You don't know
I
what
could, that I
purification
didn't know
is.
what purification is, or that I could actually directly develop or try to understand the nature of things, and that this could actually also constitute purification. In other words,
Well,
yeah, in what way are those two things related?
So, like the first thing you said, yeah, it's kind of true, but you realize then that you don't know what purification is. And knowing what purification is, it's already a form of view, form of right view, or close to the right view. So that, but, and the views pertain to the second thing you said. So they are mutually dependent. So you will not purify your views for as long as your behavior is not purified. It simply won't happen. But you won't even start purifying your behavior for as long as your views are not upgraded. So that's why it's a bit of both in a way, because a person first needs to know what to emphasize, i.e. behavior and not doing, and learning what's unwholesome and not doing anything. And then through emphasizing that, all the other views and misconceptions that they might have, by not emphasizing them and by emphasizing behavior, they will be purified. And that's like the faith aspect to some extent. So you don't have to go and figure out all of your misconceptions. You just have to figure out the fundamental, the root ones that are taking you away from emphasizing the right thing, such as purification, and what purification is. And see the example you gave, like you used to thought, oh, I just need to purify everything. I bet that meant I need to stop having these thoughts and not have them arise and always counter them and always be there ready on point. Whenever this happens, I'll deal with this. And that's not purification.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's very strong views in regard
So
to those.
that's why it's kind of a bit of both, because yes, if somebody's truly authentic, they will understand the first thing you said and they won't misconceive it. But most people are not. And the first thing you said, it's much more easier to misconceive. Oh yeah, I'm wholesome, sure, so I'll just be a good person and I don't need to worry about any of the doubts, any of the views, any of the other things that are kind of that my existence revolves around. There's like, no, you do need to, because you don't know what purification is. So yes, you got the idea, okay, I'll just purify wholesome and I'll just purify everything myself from unwholesome and won't do anything that's rooted in greed or aversion, delusion. Like, yeah, but do you know the extent of that? And do you know what purification is? Is it not having thoughts of greed, aversion, delusion? Or is it not acting out of thoughts that are pressuring you? that's already something that a person needs to repeatedly learn and relearn, to recognize that where that threshold of their responsibility is, as we keep saying, you know, you have to endure things rightly and so on, and then these things can become apparent. And all that would be known on account of upgrading your views, on account of reflecting rightly, pondering, discerning, contemplating, and then that the first part that you need to do becomes clearer. Now, of course, if all you do is just chase around things that are unclear and try to kind of assuage your own doubt all the time and ignore the emphasis on the purification of behavior, the speech and thoughts, well then, you won't purify your thoughts.
Okay. Yeah.
You might have them theoretically all lined up perfectly, but your behavior is still carrying the fuel for the wrong views. And that's that, the relay chariot.
Mm-hmm.
So the views are purified on account of behavior, on account of virtue that leads to the development of samadhi, that then leads to the purification of view, i.e. dropping all the wrong views.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today, emphasizing the virtue and samadhi that comes out of it rightly, like being able to endure the pressure of sensuality or will, not act out of it, see its full extent, learn how not to be moved by it. Like back in the day, somebody could have done that on account of faith alone. The Buddha would tell them, and they would not pay attention to any doubts that they have, they would just stick to it. Today it's highly unlikely. So you would need to really clarify why this is so, but then you have to start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start enduring it.
Yeah. I was also thinking that there's like a kind of corollary to that aspect of it is also the fact that, you know, for example, it might be said that you just develop understanding of the nature of the sense bases, for example, like, you know, nature of eye, ear. So, like, if you genuinely want to try and understand the nature of, like, what is your eye, for example, or what's the nature of your sense bases? Why are they impermanent? What does that even mean? Like, to develop practical understanding of that, it becomes quite clear, quite quickly, that it's completely incompatible, like, on, you know, throughout the day, having this as a kind of a contemplation, it's completely incompatible with acting out of your senses, as in just
distracting yourself.
Like, you know, and if you're honestly, genuinely trying to understand that thing, it naturally kind of pertains to something that is, yeah, kind of incompatible with the attitude of greed and aversion, delusion. So in that sense as well, it could be said that like correctly developing understanding of things has to, it kind of naturally comes to include a degree of purification.
Yeah.
There are things that have to
yeah.
be thought about separate.
Yeah.
Or almost never are. Really.
And that's also like where different characters, different people, different
mm-hmm.
faculties would come into play. The somebody might naturally have more of a kind of affinity towards that, mental clarity, contemplation, reflection approach.
Mm.
But yeah, even they, if they're honest, they would recognize, well, there's nothing for me to apply this approach and reflection unless my behavior is being purified, unless virtue and sense restraint is my mode of being. Somebody one might be like less reflective, less doubtful, less inclined to think about these things, but then they would see them in broad strokes on account of doing the work of purification and samadhi or and composure. So whichever one you put sort of forward as your way of engaging with towards getting understanding, the other one will have to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But fundamentally, yeah, the order of development is like you need to have had virtue established for quite a while, sense restraint, to be able to contain that pressure, see it, not take it out of it, and then whichever aspect of practice your inclinations might put first, well, it can come to some sort of fruition because, as I said, you have contained it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the order of the gradual training. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't mean that, like, okay, so until I'm developed in virtue, I should not think or read any sutta. Well, that's silly, because that's already a view.
Mm-hmm.
You don't start with neutral views, you start with lots of views. So yeah, read the suttas and stuff, just don't forget what comes first and what holds it underneath, what type of development, and there is no compromise there. Like, you might doubt this sutta, that sutta, who said what in regard to, you know, I don't know, five aggregates or something, but you don't doubt that precepts come first, and sense restraint and guarding of the doors, sense doors and watchfulness and so on. So it's, and through doing that, your views are being clarified. And through clarifying your views, keeping the precepts, enduring the pressure, not being moved on account of it, will become easier. Because it just fits, it makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
You're not resisting that idea anymore. It's not bothering you as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking, like, because one of the reasons I was thinking about this was just, like, if you read Nenavira, for example, he almost never talks or mentions explicitly,
yeah,
you know, sense restraint and virtue and so on. He's all about really understanding. And, you know, one could kind of then mistakenly get the impression from that, oh, well, that's kind of all he was doing.
Hmm.
But at the same, if you really read it properly, it's very obvious that none of the, you know, he's able to describe the very subtlest forms of bad faith on the level of the tiniest view or thought, that it's obviously impossible that...
Sure.
Could be seen or understood without having...
But all one needs to do is just have a look and see how he lived.
And exactly.
And it's like, well, he lived in, you know, quite austere, remote area. Even these days, it's quite arid in that area of Sri Lanka. But back then, it was even worse. And he lived there 24/7 for years.
Yeah, exactly.
So that already takes commitment and composure and so on. So... But yes, as an instruction, you know, as teaching, you realize, people can easily overlook, and they do overlook, especially people with intellectual tendencies. They tend to, you know, really like folks, but overlook the entire aspect of the lifestyle underneath everything that Nenavira thought and views he had and teachings he conveyed. So people will be doing PhD in Nenavira and stuff, which is like quite a contradiction in terms. But he mentions in passing, I remember, in some ways, like, that of course the virtue and sense restraint, that's, they don't, he doesn't even talk about it in the book,
because
you just
so
take
obvious.
It for granted that you have to do it,
but
you realize when people, new people, are approaching it, it's not necessarily wasteful to to mention it and reestablish it as the necessary basis, because if you do establish it, then tenth of your effort into understanding Nenavira and clarifying all those ideas he had will be more than enough for what you're trying to achieve. But if you're not developed in virtue, not sufficiently restrained, then you could be, you know, revolving day and night and still not really land on anything that matters, so to speak, because the base is still not there. The bad fuel is still there, being provided inadvertently to all the views and misconceptions. So, in other words, all your effort is applied theoretically.
Yeah,
it's over there. And then it can also then lead to further worsening of your wrong views, whereby now you think that you understood both Nyanavira and the Buddha, while still even your basic virtue and sense restraint and not acting out of unwholesome mental states is not even purified.
Yeah, I remember finding that actually quite sort of refreshing in a way, the fact that he kind of finds it so obvious or takes it so much for granted that the types of lifestyle and the virtue that needs, that he doesn't even kind of feel the need to mention it, but it's totally implied, implicit in everything that is said. And so in other words, that it's like kind of refreshing from the point of view of, you know, there's so much, I don't know, views and discussion over what constitutes even virtue, and, you know, you can think yourself very virtuous, and it's all by just merely kind of living a lifestyle that is not even close to even what he was living. But for him, it was just, well, like, of course I have to do that, but that's not even close to enough, because then you still need to develop understanding.
Yes, it's like discerning that fine middle line between just adhering to the prescribed sets of behavior on account of belief that this is leading me closer to the light of Nibbana, or just falling into that completely just explanatory psychologizing, everything must be answered and fit completely out of your mental craving, but you don't see that. So descending the middle line would be like, yeah, so if you are protecting certain types of behavior, guarding your speech, guarding your sense doors, for the sake of diminishing the views that you don't necessarily need to hunt down one by one, you just need to stick to this behavior and then keep an eye on the general picture. Okay, is my mind now, since I've been investing all the effort in precepts, enduring the pulls and the pressures of unwholesome things, not acting out of it, seeing the danger in them, is my mind calmer? Are things clearer? When suffering arises, how long it persists? How strong is the tendency for me to get rid of the arisen suffering when it arises? Is that diminishing? Am I more indifferent towards it? Am I still afraid? Am I still bothered by it? Do I still really crave for it to end? All of those little things are already showing you the development. And that's why if somebody is not too concerned about answering, you know, every permutation that their mind might come up with, but instead protects behavior, develops this type of samadhi of learning how to be movable in regard to things that want to move you, and then, yeah, the craving is factually diminishing. You're not fueling it, you're not providing any more firewood for it, and then those phenomena will become obvious. Oh, look, my mind is not moved anymore, and now you see exactly why, and there is no more doubt there. Oh yeah, there is no more, I don't crave. When unpleasant feeling touches me, I don't move either way. So why would I kick and scream internally to get rid of it and replace it with pleasure when I already developed the value of immovability? So you could see how this type of development through this correct samadhi is not as unpleasant. Like, either way you have to endure the pressure, but how much you will revolve around it, how much will you, you know, be gripped by doubts and all the pain that comes with it, that's not going to be there, because you are emphasizing the behavior and the immovability and clarity in regard to that. So you're able to refrain your own self from, oh, but let me just think about it and provide, you know, and clarify this further. No, let me just think about what's right here. What's right pressuring me? What current state of mind is? That's the extent of my thought. Not like, well, I'll stop thinking about it and I'll just do these things blindly. That would be, again, yeah, falling back onto that. I'm just mechanically doing this behavior expecting Nibbana to happen. No, you need to let the pressure in to some extent, but then you also have a choice how far you will then go on account of it mentally. And that person can arrive at the same goal without having to suffer much internally on account of mental turmoil and hindrances, but doing the work. Now, the other person who also does the work and also would then be giving in to the tendency to, you know, approach from different aspects, clarify it, compare it, revisit it, see if he can doubt it, bring up the doubt just to see if he's going to do all these things. Well, that's going to cause more pain, but of course, he's factually exploring more. So although he will suffer more, he will have more familiarity with various different aspects of practice. Fundamentally, he will arrive at the same goal. And that's really the goal. It's not like how many facets of the Dhamma you are familiar with, it's are you fully free from greed, aversion, delusion or not. So that's why whether you arrive through faith or through your just sticking to the composure practice of allowing pressure to come in but not revolving around it too far, or are you the type who will revolve around too far and then extend that endurance to that level and suffer on account of it, either way, these three types, whoever arrives first at being an arahant is the best. That's it. Because that's really the measure of success.
There's actually a sutta in the, that I thought might be relevant to this. It's in the Parayana Vaga, the Sutta Nipata. So, So somebody is asking a question. So people say there are sages in the world, and how is that? Do they call the one who qualifies through knowledge a sage, or else the one who qualifies through virtue or behavior? And the answer is, neither through view nor through learning or knowledge do the skillful ones call a sage here. Those who are unopposing, trouble-free, and rid of hope, who live like this, these I call sages.
Yeah, the extinguished ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then it continues. He asks, so these recluses and Brahmins who declare purity through the seen and the heard, who declare purity through virtue and practices, declare purity in various other ways, I wonder if they, O Blessed One, living in accordance with that, if they have crossed birth and old age. And the answer is basically that they have not crossed birth and old age, whoever declare purity in any of these ways. And the answer, I'm kind of shortening it, because it's basically just, so if these who have declared purity in all of these various ways, and if you say that they have not crossed the flood, then who has crossed birth and old age? So the answer is, I do not say that all recluses and Brahmins are in the grip of birth and old age. Those who have abandoned the seen, the heard, the thought, as well as virtue and practice, and have abandoned various other ways too, who have fully known craving and are taintless, they indeed are those who have crossed the flood. So it's, yeah, so that's the sutta, but that seemed to be kind of relating to what it's for, basically kind of saying a similar thing. And a lot of these, actually, I find they're kind of saying similar things in other ways. They always just come back to this very pertinent point that it's all comes down to just abandoning craving in whatever, from whatever angle, particular angle, it doesn't really matter. But then obviously that needs to be still understood what that actually means.
Reminds me in a way of that, the chariot sutta we're talking about, the one when he asked, so is it through purity through virtue? No. Purity through knowledge, purity through
No. But it's not
without it, yeah, exactly.